Jordan, you were covering the protests in Sydney on Monday night for The Guardian, and you were there in the thick of it as things turned. I wonder if you could take us to Town Hall and describe how the evening began.
Of course. So the evening began with a peaceful protest that was outside Sydney's Town Hall. There were thousands of people there. There was a point at which, when I was standing up on the platform behind the speakers, you could see just more and more people flooding into the area and trying to get access, but were sort of having to stand outside on the street. There was numerous high-profile speakers, former Australia of the Year Grace Tame, Green Senator Maureen Faruqi, Labor backbencher Sarah Kane. And then there was a point at which it just felt like the energy shifted, and it came not long after a quite tense conversation that I witnessed between senior police officer Paul Dunstan and two Greens MPs, Sue Higginson and Jenny Leong, and they were having a conversation with him where Sue Higginson has told me later he said that we need to disperse people, a march is going to be impossible. You know, that's not possible under the current protest restrictions that are in place. And they were urging him to call Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon for a change in police tactics because there was so many people there and so many people wanted to march that that was actually the safest option. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you could sort of feel the crowd dynamics kind of shift slightly. There wasn't so many people in Town Hall anymore, and you could hear chants from people yelling, "Let us march."
There was political opposition to this protest organised by the Palestine Action Group from going ahead. Restrictions were imposed. You've been reporting on that. Mm. What was the police presence like, and what kind of powers were handed to them by the Minns government?
So the police commissioner told us ahead of time that there would be 500 police at the protest. Now, this was in the context of very tense negotiations between the Palestine Action Group and police ahead of this protest going ahead. And I think that there's a lot of context to why a march didn't go ahead and how things unfolded that perhaps people don't realise. And that is an anti-protest legislation that was passed in the lead up to this, and also special powers handed to police by the government over the weekend. And so what this restriction essentially does is it allows static marches. So while people were standing there at Town Hall, that's perfectly legal so long as they weren't obstructing the road, so long as they weren't obstructing pedestrians. But then they're able to enforce their police powers once people actually did start to attempt to march and head to the road. And then on top of that, we had these powers that the Minns government handed police over the weekend, which declared Herzog's visit a major event. So this hands police additional move-on powers. It allows police to search people anywhere within the designated area. And the Palestine Action Group actually challenged that declaration in the Supreme Court in an urgent hearing. And we found out probably no more than an hour before the protest kicked off that the Palestine Action Group had lost that challenge. So police had those additional powers last night, and I could hear in the crowd them citing their move on power under that major event declaration when things were starting to heat up.
Okay, so at dusk, police began to try and disperse protesters. Can you talk to me about that moment and how, as you've described it, the energy shifted and things began to change?
Yeah, I think the best way to describe what unfolded was just chaos and brutal. I could see there was probably like 2 meters ahead of me where people were attempting to set off and march, police on mounted horseback and some sort of scuffle happening. And then all of a sudden I could feel like my mouth was burning, my eyes were burning. And it took me a second to clock what was happening. And it wasn't until I saw Indigenous activists who I saw speak at the Invasion Day rally a couple of weeks ago sort of emerge from the scuffle, just tears streaming from his face, yelling that they were deploying pepper spray and yelling for someone to give him water. And so me and my colleague Stephen Byrne were just sort of kind of monitoring the situation, sort of trying to talk to people, but there was just sort of so much happening. And I had put on goggles and a face mask that our photographer had given to me before we had left and sort of said, oh, I know this seems silly, like you probably won't need it, but just in case. We put those on, and then I had noticed this father with his child kind of standing next to me, and like gave him the face mask because she was, would have, if I was getting it, she was definitely getting it. It was difficult to sort of know. We were at one end, what was happening at the other end. And it wasn't until I had gotten a phone call from a Labour backbencher, Anthony D'Adam, telling me that he had just seen multiple police punch someone in the crowd up the other end. That we then left that section to see what was happening at another section of the protest. I think when I was up at the left, I thought that I was where sort of most of the action and the violent scuffle was happening, but I realised it was happening everywhere.
You make a good point, Jordan. At large protests like this one, people usually only have sight of what is happening directly around them. But you were moving, you were roaming around in the crowd, speaking to other eyewitnesses. What were they telling you?
So I'd spoken to quite a few people who kept making the same point. If they just let us march, if they had just let us march, then we wouldn't have seen the violence. It would have been a peaceful march, as we'd seen dozens and dozens of times happen before. And people were also just confused, a little bit confused about which way to go. There was a point later on where we saw this man essentially just grabbed by police and dragged back behind the containment line away from his partner, and his partner just sort of screaming, trying to get him back from police, and people just running at us, tears streaming from their eyes, asking if we had water, and I was pouring water on people's faces and trying to have conversations with them, but just sort of trying to be mindful of where the police were, what was happening, because it didn't sort of seem to matter whether you were media or whether you were a protester. The police were kind of charging and running at you.
Jordan, you've described some of the chaotic scenes. Let's talk about some of the footage that has gone viral from the Sydney protest, including images of police pulling, pushing and dragging some Muslim men who were praying. That's been condemned by many community groups.
We are appalled and outraged by footage from last night. The conduct of the New South Wales Police represents a serious breach of religious sanctity. It is deeply distressing, unacceptable, and not reflective of Australia that we know. We demand clear answers from the New South Wales government, from the Premier of New South Wales, Chris Minns, and the New South Wales Police, and we demand for immediate action.
You've spoken to the man who was leading the prayers, Sheikh Wissam Shalkawi. What did he tell you?
Yeah, I spoke to him a short time ago, and he told me that he, alongside some others, had been hoping to march. They had been there earlier at Town Hall listening to the speeches. Dusk had passed. They realised they were overdue to do their sunset prayers, and so they moved away from the crowd, away from where the police were, and they set up inside the sort of foreground of Town Hall near the stairs where the speakers had been speaking, under usual police powers, wouldn't be breaking any laws whatsoever, and began to conduct their prayers, which he was leading. And he said all of a sudden he could hear screams, and he could see from the corner of his eye the people that were praying with him getting plucked away by police. And he said, you're not supposed to break. Once you're praying, you're not supposed to break your prayer. So he just kept going until he himself was pulled by police. And he just doesn't understand why the police thought it necessary to violently drag away men who were praying who weren't breaking any laws.
Okay. The Premier has staunchly defended the police response, and police have dismissed criticisms of excessive force. What are they saying? How are they explaining or seeking to justify their actions?
So last night, Peter McKenna, who's an assistant commissioner for the New South Wales Police Force, came out and said that we offered the Palestine Action Group to march from Hyde Park. They could have done it. Also that accused the speakers themselves of inciting the crowd to march, that the police were just responding to violence by the protesters. I think in terms of that comment about the Hyde Park march, the Palestine Action Group had handed their Form 1 into march from Town Hall before the police extended their restriction, which saw them unable to march from there. Town Hall has long been a very important site for political protest, and as has New South Wales Parliament, where they planned to march to directly protest this decision, this government decision of inviting Isaac Herzog. Like, that was an important message that they wanted to send.
Mm. And for people not from Sydney, protesters said they didn't want to gather in a big, empty, dark park. The point was to be at some of these important sites in the city.
Exactly. Hyde Park generally is used as a protest site on the weekend during the day. Typically, when it's a protest at night, during the week, it's Town Hall. That's just the way the protests are run in Sydney. And the Palestine Action Group has said this offer of Hyde Park was merely a distraction to distract away from the bigger issue, which is this crackdown on protests and this right for people to protest against someone who is accused of inciting genocide.
There have been calls for the Premier to apologise to the Muslim community over the treatment of those Muslim worshippers. Has he done that, Jordan?
No, so Chris Minns hasn't apologised.
Look, I think it's important to say that New South Wales Police would never, never have deliberately provoked the Islamic community. There's a deep respect and a long-standing history of cooperation between New South Wales Police and the Islamic leadership and the Arabic community in Sydney that stretches back a long way. But context is important.
And this morning he defended police action.
I think it's important that people not judge the actions of police on 10 seconds or 15 seconds social media clips. That's not fair to police's relationship with the protest organisers, the 100 protesters that successfully and peacefully managed.
He also said that everything possible to avoid that confrontation was done, including what I referenced earlier, which was McKenna's point that, oh, we told them to go to Hyde Park. But I think it's also important that people are aware of the fact that the government and the police have been warned since they passed this legislation in the wake of the Bondi attack and in the lead up to Isaac Herzog's visit that these laws had created a situation in which something bad was going to happen. One of Chris Minns' own backbenchers, Stephen Lawrence, warned that days ago that he didn't see how preventing the ability for people to protest Isaac Herzog's visit was going to do any good, and that he feared it could create a flashpoint.
Jordan, you mentioned there one Labor MP who was at attendance at the rally. There were other Labor MPs who were there and New South Wales Greens MPs, including Abigail Boyd, who says she needed medical treatment after the protests. Why?
So she actually witnessed what happened with the men while they were praying, and she was standing there filming it. And she started getting jostled by police while she was filming what was going on. And she said that she repeated again and again, "I'm an MP. This is a peaceful protest. I'm just recording what's happening here." And she was then pushed in the back by police. She's sprained her wrist, hurt her neck. She went to hospital last night. She actually confronted the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Mal Lanyon, this morning while he was giving a press conference. The interaction was witnessed by a colleague of mine who was at the protest, and she apparently described her assault to the police commissioner and said, "It's not okay." Lanyon then responded to her, "Are you happy for me to get a police officer to come and speak to you? We'll take it seriously." She told me last night when I spoke to her about the alleged assault that this goes to what I mentioned earlier, that these anti-protest laws, that this refusal to let people march had created a condition in which a flashpoint happened.
Police say they were confronted by what they have described as a, quote, angry and aggressive group of protesters. Is that what you saw, Jordan?
I think people became increasingly angry at the fact that they weren't given their right to march. And I think that what the police probably have missed in all this is also there was a level of anger there about the very thing that they were protesting about. The fact that the Australian government has invited someone who was accused of inciting genocide with open arms, said that this is going to be a moment of unity for Australia, while stripping any right to march or to protest his visit after people have essentially seen a live stream genocide over the past 2 years. So at the same time that all of this was happening, Isaac Herzog was actually in another part of the city at the International Convention Centre that was attended by political leaders and mourners and members of the Jewish community. And I think that there was anger that only increased at the way people were being treated by police. While I was witnessing what was happening last night, I kept thinking about a Palestinian man, Shamik Badra, who I had interviewed last week and who I knew was at the protest and who I had been keeping my eye out for because I wanted to interview him again while I was there. And he had told me last week how he barely misses a Palestine Action Group rally. He often speaks at them, and the reason that he goes is because he's lost so many family members over the past 2 years. One of those people is his brother. He hasn't heard from him. He actually doesn't know if he's dead or alive. He assumes he was buried under the rubble of his home in Gaza, and he told me that he also fears that he was buried alive and that plays on his mind. Those are the types of people that are at these rallies.
What has the Palestine Action Group said this morning?
So this morning, Josh Lees, who's one of the main spokespeople of the Palestine Action Group, appeared in a press conference with a civil liberties organisation and Greens MP Sue Higginson. And he said that last night we saw the people of Sydney mobilise in huge numbers. He said that that demonstration was an expression of the popular will, and he said that that was met with sickening state violence. He said that the attack was made on protesters to roll out the red carpet for someone who has incited genocide in Gaza, saying that's what happened here. And he said, of course, in the lead up to that march, which I've explained, that there was push to allow people to march. He said this was just an attack on those people who tried to do so.
We'll be right back.